Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Cornbread Said. This is Shook Girl Poetry Is Me, a.k.a. Charlotte Hollingshed. I want to welcome you to the show. I'm really excited about our guest today, and I am grateful for everyone who's able to join in with us to listen to the show live today. We are bringing to the dinner table Ms. Flora Brown. Flora Brown is a certified guided autobiography facilitator and trainer and part of the Berrien Center for Autobiographical Studies. Oh, Lord, I knew I was going to butcher that word today. She received a BA in English, a master's in education, and a PhD in curriculum and instruction from the University of Southern California. Ms. Brown has enjoyed teaching junior high school through university levels for 20 years in Los Angeles and another 20 years teaching critical thinking at Fullerton College. With the help of her husband, she earned the title Mom to four children, one of whom has expanded their family to include three grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. Wow, and that was the last count. Now, Professor Demetrius Flora published 13 books, the most recent of which is Color Your Life Happy, Do It My Way Journal. In her life story workshop, she shared her love of stories and belief in their power to enrich lives through writing, sharing, and preserving life stories and life experiences. In just a few moments, we will bring our guests onto the dinner table. And by the way, we did open up the show with Roberta Flack and Donnie Hathaway, You Are My Heaven. And just a couple of announcements. We will be continuing to do live shows. We do have a few open slots for interviews. If you are interested in being showcased or know someone that you believe should be showcased, by all means, feel free to reach out to me. Email address is cimaradio@mail.com. But without further ado, we're going to go ahead and bring on our special guest, Ms. Flora Brown. Welcome to Cornbread Said. How are you?
I am great. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I hope you liked your opening song.
Yes, I did. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, again, it is our pleasure to have you on with us. Even though I did read the bio, but tell us a little bit more about you. How did you get to where you are now?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I'm going to try to give you the short version, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
First of all, I always wanted to be a teacher since I was 4 years old when I begged my mother to let me start school, and I was too young to go to school. In Missouri and many places, they had you had to be five before you could start kindergarten. But I put up such a fuss that my mother said, okay, they aren't going to let you register. You're too young, but I'll take you there anyway, and which was really remarkable for my mother because she didn't usually cave in. So we went there and to the kindergarten class, and the all the parents were in line with their children, and my mother and I got up next in line, and the teacher saw my birth certificate and said, I'm sorry, she's too young. You're going to have to bring her back next year. And when I heard that, I broke out crying. I had a tantrum. I have never had a tantrum since then, but I was so upset that I wasn't going to get to start school because that's how desperately I wanted to go. So, of course, they didn't know what to do because in those days, children didn't act like that. And they just decided, okay, we're going to let her start and see if she can keep up because they used to think that if you were too young, you couldn't keep up. And that was how I started this journey. And I loved school so much that I eventually moved to the other side of the desk from being a student to a teacher. And I've enjoyed it. And even now that I've retired from teaching, I still love teaching. And that's why I got into doing the life story workshop, because I'm still helping people. In this case, this is, you know, the general public, but to help them reach their goals. So that's kind of how I got into teaching. But at the same time, I always wanted to be married, have a family. So I decided the only way I was going to do those things, I had to do both of them along the way. So
okay,
I did have a family, yeah. And then I taught school, which works out pretty well when you're a parent, because the kids were in school at the same time. I was in school, and so our schedules worked out really well. But once I got into teaching, I started writing and eventually wrote. Mostly I wrote academic stuff in the early days when I was still teaching. By the time I retired, however, I wanted to write something for the general public. And that was when I wrote my first book on the book on happiness, because it's a retail book for the general public. And that was a lot of fun. It took a lot of work, but I did it. And as soon as you put out a book and people know you're an author, then they ask you for help. So I got into helping other people become authors. And I went from that to helping the ordinary everyday person who doesn't want to be an author, but they want to write their life stories. So that's what my workshops are about. So I actually help aspiring authors who want to be published, and I also help the ordinary person who doesn't want to be published per se, but they want their stories to be left behind for their family. So I work with both of them, and it's very gratifying for me.
It sounds satisfying. That's amazing. You know, when I had pulled up your profile to invite you for the interview, and I was really taken by the thought process of being able to write your story, because quite often, you know, which I'm sure you've learned prior to and during your journey here, that most wait until after their loved ones have gone, and then they try to use the genealogies to figure out the what, where, and where it came from. And a lot of times there's a lot of missing history in there, so we still don't end up knowing everything we need to.
That's right.
And I think also what gets missed, which when I was doing home health, I enjoyed listening to stories of the older couples, and they would tell us very those details about how they met. And I think those are the things that most children and grandchildren miss out on. And it really gives you an insight on who they were. Yeah. So now, with your workshops, how do you ignite the? Well, I don't know if that ignites the word I want, because they're already coming to you, so they're already ignited with it. But how do you guide them? That's what I want. How do you guide them to put out that story?
Okay, good question. This particular method that I use works with the idea that, well, let me back up and say this. When people think about writing their life stories, they get immediately overwhelmed with the idea, because they think about an autobiography, which traditionally an autobiography was written by someone who was in older age. They were usually famous people, celebrities, government officials, royalty, and those people wanted to write their stories kind of from birth to wherever they were in old age to give a history of their lives. And their lives were usually entangled with the history of our country or the history of whatever field they were in. So those were pretty extensive books. But that's not what the ordinary person needs to write. And people worry that they're not famous enough, that their lives aren't interesting enough. They want to write their stories, but they also feel kind of intimidated. And they also, because they're not writers, they worry that their writing skills aren't great enough. So what I do is give them reassurance that all of us, including me, when we get ready to write our life stories, it's intimidating for us, no matter what. And a good example was before I retired, my oldest daughter gave me a book that was a journal that someone had written about writing your life story. And on each page was a question, and the idea was that you would answer the questions throughout the book, and there were like 201 questions. And the idea being, by the time you got to the end of the book, you would have answered all these questions about your life, about yourself, and then you could hand that book to your kids. That was the idea of that book. Well, I'm telling you, the first week or so after I retired, I said, okay, let me take a look at this book. Now, keep in mind, I had already published language arts textbooks. I had already written academic articles. I had already taught 40 years, okay? I'd already had four kids and helped them with their homework. I owned a tutoring program for a period of time. So I had a lot of experience in writing. And yet, when I got ready to write my own life story, it was overwhelming to decide where to start. Most people think you start from birth. You know, I was born in the city and this, da, da, da. And you have to do it chronologically. And some of the books that are out there tell you to do that. But that is not the way you do it at all. The way I do it in my program is to stimulate your memories, and we do activities to kind of look at a timeline of different things you've done in your life and talk about what those activities meant to you. But the very first writing assignment is what we call branching points, and that is you pick a turning point in your life. It can be from any point. It can be childhood, adolescence, marriage, anywhere along the line, some point where you had a big turning point, where your life changed. Sometimes that's because, you know, you got married, you started a new job, or you got fired from a job, or whatever happened, and you write about that turning point. And people don't realize until they start writing that when you're writing about a turning point like that, it doesn't take long before you have written a couple of pages. And the method that I use, we urge people to write at least two pages, because when we get together as a group, and we do this as live, now of course we do it online, but they write their stories at home. And then when we get online together, they read their, each person reads his or her story to the group. And that's where the magic takes place, because you may think your life is not that exciting because you were raised on a farm and you, you know, had a simple life versus somebody else who grew up in the city. And yet, when you read your story to the group, they are going to be so enthralled and so happy to hear your story, because your story is informing them about maybe a lifestyle they never had. And it's fascinating. Or sometimes people will think that something that happened to them because it was a sad event. They think that they're the only ones. You know, they feel shame for that event. And then they read their story to the group, and the people in the group are so moved by their story. And after each person reads their story, we comment on the story. So sometimes people will have read a story that's pretty sad, and they may even start crying at, while they're reading it. But when they finish, we say, wow, you were so brave to go through that and still do this, this, and, you know, we encourage each other. And that's the difference in being at home trying to write your story from when you were born and trying to do a chronological thing. That's the difference in being in the group where you have encouragement and you get to see your life in a different light than you would see it by yourself, because, you know, we've been living with our, whatever, our facts all of our lives, and we have perhaps not thought much of them. Not only that, most of us, when we were growing up, were told not to share your life, your what's going on in your family with other people. And I know you've heard this saying that you don't air your dirty laundry. And for that reason, a lot of people have been hesitant or even fearful of sharing their lives. And if you were in a a situation where your life was in danger, and you, for example, growing up, let's say you, the people who lived through the Holocaust, and you know, managed to make it out of there, and were able to finally get back to some to life as they wanted to live it, and perhaps were able to come to America. Once they get a life that they like, you know, they get the job they want, the home they want, and they start to live a quote-unquote happy life, they don't want to talk about what happened back there in the Holocaust. Our ancestors from that came out of slavery, they did not want to talk about that. Most of them, very, very few, were willing to share their stories because they were so painful. They did not want to relive those stories. But here's what happens when you are sharing your story, even if it's a painful one, and even if it brings up tears, guess what? You lighten your load, because just because you didn't share that story doesn't mean you're not carrying that grief around with you. And until you open it up and let it out, you are going to carry that all of your life, and it's going to affect how you interact in the world. You're going to have a certain attitude about yourself. You may feel less than. You may feel you're not enough. You may feel you're not worthy, whatever, based on what happened to you. But the biggest problem is keeping it a secret. And once you let out that what to you is pain, you're going to find out other people had painful experiences too, and maybe some even worse than what you think yours is. And this is what happens when you share your stories. Now, you don't have to tell, you know, when people come in my class, they say, there's some things that I don't really want to talk about. Do I have to write about those? I said, no. Each one of the themes that they write on, they get suggested questions, about 14 questions. They can pick one of those, or they can come up with another one. If what you want to write about is a turning point, is not on that list, make up your own incident and then read and write about that. But every time when someone says, I have something I don't want to talk about, and could I write about whatever I want, I said, sure. Guess what they end up writing about?
The things they didn't want to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know why? Because they have cracked open a little space, just the mention of it and the opportunity now to get it out. They just, you know, open a little space and they start writing. All they have to do is write a sentence or something. You know, my sister and I haven't talked for 40 years. And you know, and they start writing, and they end up writing so many pages. And that's why in the class I have to limit the number of pages they can read, because we don't have time for them to read the whole thing. They just get to read the first two pages. And some of them start typing the font, smaller and smaller font, so they can get more stuff on two pages. And I said, okay, we're going to have to set a rule about how big the font needs to be, because I want to get around to everybody. You know, everybody gets to tell their stories. So writing your life story is more than just leaving for your family. It's for you. It's to help get these painful things out, or even the things that you accomplished, to take a look at them and realize how fantastic you are to have done what you did, to finish college. And you had five children, and you raised them by yourself, and you weren't sure where your next meal was going to come from. But in spite of all that, you persevered, and now you are president of your own company or whatever, you know, whatever the achievement is. And many times people don't, because they lived it, they don't realize how spectacular that is. So when you write your story, you're not just leaving it behind for your family and your loved ones. You also are building your own self-esteem, you're empowering yourself, because if you manage to do those things, you can do something else you want to do, like write a book, like write this story.
Yes, ma'am.
So people are afraid, you know, at first, but in the class, I give them examples, and I give them encouragement, and, you know, they get a lot of support. It's kind of like the reason that you go to grief therapy, you go to grief support groups, because everybody in there shares a common experience. You know, it may not be the same person or relative that died, but you share a common experience. And when you hear other people's stories in the grief support group or in my group, it really does offer you relief. And you learn techniques from people, too. You know, sometimes you'll say, wow, how did you get through that? And some people mm-hmm. will say, well, I started running every day, and I found out I liked running. And it really cleared my mind and it improved my attitude. And so that's how I got through it. And somebody else may say, well, you know, I prayed or I started meditating or whatever they did. So you start learning from other people what things work for them, and then you have those things you can try for yourself. So it's really a fantastic experience, and I just love seeing how people light up when they realize the power of their stories. And here's another thing about writing your story. Your mm-hmm. children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, they need to know what you went through. For example, my grandchildren, they just know me as a teacher, college professor. You know, that's what I was mm-hmm. when they came into the world. And my great-grandchildren will be the same way. But they don't know what I've been through. They don't know what stuff I may have been through. They don't know if I could barely pay the rent or something way back when. You know what I'm saying? They need
right,
to know that.
Right.
Because they may mm-hmm. have an experience where they feel like, oh, I don't know if I can make it. Boy, I wish I was like Grandma. She's got it made. She's got that big house.
Right.
They don't know what all I went through. So it's not something you want to, like, sit at the Thanksgiving dinner table and spill your guts about all your horror stories mm-hmm. while you're eating dinner. But to have the stories of how you overcame something, how you survived mm-hmm. something, that's very mm-hmm. important, because they will get encouraged by that. I mean, my oldest granddaughter is the age I was. Now she's the age I was when I went back to school to get my doctorate. And so, you know, when they read about what you did at the same age where they are now, it makes a difference. And, of course, it helps other people, too, not just your family. That's why memoirs
yes,
are some of the most popular books out there, because we love learning how people overcame things and how they managed to get through whatever they went through. So, yeah, the stories are important, and I'm mm-hmm. great at helping people get those stories out and feel secure about sharing them. And eventually some of them actually end up publishing them. Most of them, however, they type them up, they put them in a format to give their families, and that you can do that too. It's a wonderful thing, because otherwise how will you know we're talking the details of day-to-day life that mm-hmm. people won't know. Like you said, genealogy and DNA, yeah, we can create a family tree, but all we mm-hmm. know on the family tree is the name of my grandmother and my grandfather. How did they meet? How did they feel about
right.
when they met? How was their relationship? Mm-hmm. A whole lot of things that are, you know, did they both agree to go to the church that they ended up going to? Or maybe one of them didn't want to go and said, you go. Just all these little bitty details we need to know to help our lives. And unless somebody writes them down, we will not know.
Yeah, you definitely won't know. Yes, ma'am.
Nope.
You know, I as you were speaking, I was thinking about how the process that you use with your clients is pretty similar to what we do when we're working with our poetry groups. You know, we encourage them to just to write freely initially.
Exactly.
And you really don't have, you have no idea exactly what's going to come out. And, like, the mm-hmm. moment they start writing, then they're like, oh, wait, I think I like that. And especially when they've been going through stuff, and then they find that they were probably a little bit stronger than they thought that they get themselves credit
exactly.
for.
Exactly.
Especially to realize that they've endured a bit and then they've grown.
Exactly.
We have one gal in one of our groups, when she first started writing, she did it not to do it for the long haul. She was like, oh, I'm just going to write a few because she was encouraged to do so. But the more that she wrote, the more that she saw, and not only did she understand what she started to learn about herself, to understand that what she went through and how she handled it, but then she started seeing that along the way she was growing, not just in her thought process, but in her emotional strength. And
exactly.
You know, to be able to share that with others, again, like you said, you never know who's going through what you are or what you have gone through.
Exactly.
I think that power of the pen is just wonderful.
It's a wonderful thing.
Yes,
it is. And we have to encourage our kids and ourselves to do that. But unfortunately, many times, if we don't get into a group like your poetry group and like my workshop, and there are others around the city, and nowadays, you know, a lot of stuff online, that you can join a group, almost any kind of group, that will enable you to share whatever it is you want to do, whether it's poetry or your life story or writing fiction books, nonfiction, whatever you are drawn to do, doing it with a group that's on the same wavelength that you're on makes a huge difference.
Yes, ma'am. And I can only imagine what it's like to be able to work with you. You've got such an energy. I know we can even feel it coming through this interview. So I can really imagine being able to get in there and be excited about one's life journey as they're sharing it.
Right.
Definitely beautiful. Yes, ma'am. It is the top of the hour, and we are having a wonderful dinner time here with Miss Flora Morris here on Fort Brown. Excuse me. I was looking at I'm on Amazon. I'm on Amazon. Where'd I get that name from? I'm on Amazon. But we're enjoying this interview here with her, and we're really, you know, if you really stop and think about, you know, to even if you don't decide you want to write a story to put into a book or even to share with others, but even just to do it for yourself in order to appreciate where you've gone and where you've come from and the strengths and your weaknesses, those things that make you who you are right now. And
exactly.
It's a beautiful thing to be able to do. We are going to take a short pause for the cause, a couple of commercial breaks. What to share with those in the poetry world, we will be attending the every third Friday here in Macon, Georgia at the TWF Business Solutions at 828 Walnut Street. That is the spoken word play hosted by Aisha Andrea. It starts at 7 p.m. The doors open. Show starts promptly at 8 p.m., lasts until roughly 10. And the special feature poet is Bo Ward, and $7 admission. So we look forward to those who are able to come out tomorrow, celebrate and honor these poets, step into the stage. And as well, if you were a poet and you want to step to stage, make sure you get onto that sign-up list. And again, this is Charlotte, a.k.a. Poetry Is Me, on Cornbread Fed, here on Cleveland's own Smooth Jazz, WJZZ. And we are excited again to say to have a special guest. We always love to have our dinner guests. We're able to come and not just bring an excitement to the show, but to educate us, uplift us. And we definitely are hoping all those who are listening in to us on the phone lines, through the internet site, again, thank you for joining us. We're going to take a little pause and listen to another Roberta Flack song. This is First Time I Ever Saw Your Face.
To Roberta Flack.
The first time ever I saw your face, I thought the sun
Again, that was Roberta Flack, First Time Ever I Saw Your Face. And I know growing up, that was one of the many artists that my mom used to play to death. And then oh, wow. I eventually took over her records.
Do you still have
yeah.
them? Oh, wow.
I don't.
Oh, you don't?
My mom, yeah, she never really let me have them. I just took them
oh,
over.
No. Okay.
So when I moved out the house, they had to stay put. But I definitely enjoyed that era of music. It's something very open and honest about the lyrics that came during that time frame, the 60s going into the 70s. The artists were very transparent, and you can a lot of times really tell that they were putting themselves completely into that song. A lot of times it was their life,
yep.
without any filters. Yeah, it was.
Right.
It's
yeah.
definitely a wonderful season. Again, you are listening to Cornbread Fed with our special guest, Flora Brown. And before the break, I was mentioning being on Amazon. And I was taking a look at both books I came across, the Color Your Life Happy Gratitude Journal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was reading over the description. So for you ladies and gents who are really into bettering your lives, improving how you interact, but not just yourself, but others, whether it's your personal or business relationships, help promote better sleep, your health, keeping a daily journal of things that you have to be gratitude for. This is what this book is all about. It's designed for you to keep those daily thoughts and watch yourself improve. The other one, where did my little tab go? I don't know. I'll find it.
Could I say something about the gratitude journal?
Yes,
that
ma'am.
Journal
well, I'm
is
fine
actually,
graduate with stuff over here.
That gratitude journal is an 8.5 by 11 book, about almost an inch thick, because it goes through the year from January 1st through December 31st. So there's a page for every day. And part of the page says to write down reflections, and the other part says, you know, write down things you're grateful for. So it enables you to really keep track of every day. And you don't have to, you know, like when you receive that journal, let's say I gave you a copy right now, and here we are in September, you can go over to September the 3rd and start your writing there and go through all the way, because the year isn't there, just the month and the day. And so you can start it whenever you receive it for a gift. But it's a big book.
Ooh,
so
I like
not
that.
The typical, yeah, it's not the typical 6 by 9 or 5.5 by 8.5 book.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, it's like the size of a 3-ring notebook almost. So it's a hefty, it's hard to tell that on Amazon because they just put them kind of side by side. But, yeah, that's a hefty book, and it's a great gift because people who want to get into journaling, they have a way to start. Now, if they really get carried away and they want to journal lots more pages, then they would have to, you know, get a blank journal where they could just write what they like. But that one is, I was motivated to write that 1 year or put that together 1 year.
Oh, that's cool. Now, I really like that. I've gotten journal books from church a few times, but they usually always have the year. I always find myself going there and marking it out because I've gotten it in such a weird place in the year. And then, you know, I don't want to waste the other pages. Yeah. So
yeah.
That's,
yeah. Well,
that's
this,
definitely
my
awesome.
Book is different because the year is not there. So when the month and the day, and then you can write in the year. And that makes it cool because, like I say, you can give that as a gift anytime, and people can start where they want. And the other one is a typical size journal, the Do It My Way journal. That one is just line pages. There's no prompts. You can use it for whatever you want. And one of my friend's daughter gave me the idea for that because she likes the journal, but she likes the ones that are blank or where, you know, you can write freely, write whatever you want. You aren't trapped by whatever the prompt is that the author has created. So I made that for her. I dedicated that one to her.
Okay, that's awesome. I like that too. I like to journal too and have the free form. I probably have a journal for almost everything.
Well, that's good. That's good.
And the other book I wanted to ask about, oh, I'm sorry, hon.
I was just going to say, a good thing to have for your life story. If you've journaled a lot, you can go back and look through your journal to find ideas, things that you really have forgotten about. It's amazing the details we forget. And if we haven't written it somewhere, if we haven't journaled, it'll just go. And then when you read it, you go, oh, yeah, I remember this. But you might not have remembered it had you not written it down.
That's true. That's true. It's why I do write a lot, because a lot of times I don't remember. Especially if I had a really great idea about something, and all of a sudden I'm like, man, what was that thing I said? Yeah, definitely. And you had another book I came across, the Color Your Life Happy, Create Your Unique Path, and Claim the Joy You Deserve.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that book?
I can tell you a lot about that book. That's kind of my signature book. That's my main retail book that I put together. And I wrote that book because when I was growing up or was a young adult, people would often ask me, why are you so happy all the time? And the truth is that they were assuming that being happy means you're never sad, that you're just walking around skipping through the meadows and you never have any problems and you're never, you know, your life is just perfect. So I had that in the back of my head when I retired. And I kept, when I retired, I wanted to do a lot of things. I was like a kid in a candy store. And I thought, okay, what am I going to do? I learned about blogging, so I started a blog. I learned about Blog Talk Radio, as a matter of fact, and I started a radio show. Did you know I had a radio show on Blog Talk Radio?
No.
I'm not doing it anymore, but I started it back in the very first year that I learned about blogging and that and Blog Talk Radio. I think it was about 2008, something like that. And I started a radio show similar to yours. It was an interview show. And I kept it for about 3.5 years. So I have over 100 interviews over there. And so I would interview different people about their lives. And I was blogging about different things that pertain to happiness and the life you lead. And I eventually noticed about 2009 or 2010, somewhere along there, I said, wait a minute, I've written so much about happiness, I have a book here practically. So I wrote my first book on happiness, the first edition, based on my blog. And then after I wrote that first one, I think that was 2009, and on the, it's not for sale on, you'll see it online, but if it's for sale, it's probably at some store, you know, a used copy or whatever, the one that has the white background. But I decided after 2009 that I wasn't perfectly happy with that book because I felt like I hadn't gone deep enough. And I decided to write a second edition. What I wanted to accomplish in that book and what I believe I've accomplished is to help people understand that the life you lead is the life you decide to lead. And I wanted to give people an idea of things not only that I went through and my experiences, but in the book I have examples from history, from psychology, from personal other personal stories. I have some poetry in there. As a matter of fact, that book has a lot of things about my own life. So I start, there's 10 chapters, and I went through, I expanded the second edition, so it has more in it than the first. But I went through and shared, you know, what is happiness and how do you achieve it and so forth. But I included a lot of things about what was going on with my life and with other people. So when I talked about maintaining harmony in your family, I shared some experiences from my own family and things that we did. My kids' favorite recipe, I put that in the book, and I put things in there about my life and, like I say, other people's too, so that when people go through the book, I want them to recognize some things that they can do if they choose to, but most important, I want them to realize that being happy is a choice, and being happy is not the opposite of sadness. So in other words, you are going to be sad if you are human with some kind of empathy. You're going to have some sad times in your life. The difference between a happy person and somebody who's miserable all the time is the happy person recognizes that the full range of emotions are available to all of us. So you're going to get sad. The difference is the happy person comes out of it because they recognize it's a phase, it's something I'm going through. I accept it, I own it, I cry when I need to cry, but I know that I'm going to come through it, and that's what a happy person is, and I wanted people to know that because I'm telling you, people used to ask me when I was raising the kids all kind of questions that I thought, what? Like my husband and I took my kids to Yosemite National Park, which is a gorgeous park. And like it was about an 8-hour drive from my house. But it was, you've heard of Yosemite. Have you ever been there?
Mm-hmm. No, ma'am, I haven't. No.
Oh my gosh. It's when you say park, it's that's the wrong name to think about for that place because it's huge. It has all of these different kinds of overnight accommodations. You can camp on the ground. You can camp in lodges. You can camp in. You can stay in hotels. Hotels. There's boating. There's all these gorgeous natural waterfalls. It's a huge place. So anyway, one of my mother's friends, when we got back from Yosemite, we went for a week vacation one year when my kids were small, and this lady asked me, how did you guys know how to get there? And I said, I beg your pardon? I said, we went to AAA and got a map and, made reservations and learned, read all the material about what you need to bring and what activities were available. And then we followed the map and got on the road and went there. I mean, to her, it was this mysterious thing about how you plan something like that. And I thought, wow. And many times people are that way about, because they just see the end result of what you do,
Right.
And they see, when I got my doctorate, it took me 4 years. I quit my full-time job to go to school 4 years, and I had two kids already, and I had my third child while I was in the doctoral program. Anyway, the point I'm making is when I graduated, all people see is that, you graduated, you finished, that's fantastic. Yeah. They don't know about all of the hard work of getting through it and, having a new baby and studying for exams at the same time. The stuff that you have to do to go through to get where you want to go. And unfortunately, unless, somebody tells them or unless they read a book about it or learn, then they end up not going after their dreams because they think that it has to be magical. It's not magical. You take one step and then another step, and the next thing you know, you're miles away from where you started. But that's the only way to get there. And yes, it's going to be hard sometimes. Yes, it's going to be like I heard someone say today that if you wanted to get to the top of Mount Everest, somebody could conceivably pick you up from the bottom and carry you up to the top and leave you there and go away. But you would die. You know why? Because you did not make that journey on your own. If you made that journey on your own up that mountain, your body would have gotten sensitized and to the weather conditions. Of course, if you had good sense, you would have trained before you started that journey up this mountain. But the point is, if you didn't go through the stuff that it would take to toughen you up and help you deal with the conditions of the weather, by the time if you just got plunked at the top, you wouldn't survive because your body's not ready for it because you haven't gone through what you needed to go through to get there. And that's the same with everything. Whatever we want to do, you're going to have to go through some stuff, whatever it takes. That's why that whole concept of overnight success is ridiculous.
You go from zero to
being a star overnight. Almost always you hear these stories of people crash and burn when they get fame that fast because they haven't been through what they needed to go through. They skip steps. It's like trying to bake a cake and you're too impatient to mix the ingredients properly, so you just want to dump them in a pan and put them in the oven without stirring it up and baking it. That's not going to be a very good cake, right?
That whole description just hurt my feelings. I'm a baker, and that's no way that's going to come out nice.
See what I'm saying? So, and using the cake as an example, if I don't know how to bake a cake, it doesn't mean I can't. But I've got to either look up a recipe or consult someone like you. It's better for me to consult someone who knows how to bake it. I've tasted yours. I really like yours. and I want to learn how to make it like yours. Now you can mentor me. More than just telling me the ingredients, because you know that's not enough. Especially, it sounds like you're from down south, right?
No, ma'am.
My mother was from down south. Where are you from?
I'm from Seattle.
Oh, my goodness. But you have Macon, Georgia. How long have you been there? Are you in Macon?
Yes, ma'am. I've been here since 2011.
Yeah, the reason I said south is because I hear you say, yes, ma'am, and the only place I heard that was from my mother's from Arkansas.
Oh,
and,
okay.
People that they say ma'am, and they're very polite. But the point I'm making is if I want to learn how to bake like you, I need to talk to you. Not only, you can't just tell me the ingredients. You're going to have to show me. The best way is for you to show me how you mix those together. My mother was a potato, sweet potato pie was her, one of her signature pies that everybody loved. And all the years I was growing up, we just, you know, took it for granted. And one day after she was quite up in age, my youngest daughter was about 12, and she said, Grandma, would you teach me how to make your sweet potato pie? I had never thought about, I mean, I watched her make it, but I'd never written the ingredients down because, you know, she just whipped it together. And so my mother said, I sure will. She said, but first we're going to have to start at the beginning. We're going to have to go to the grocery store, and I'm going to teach you how to select your potatoes correctly. And you see the difference? When you get ready to learn something from a mentor, they start at the beginning. How do you select the potatoes so that you understand to be successful? How you got to have the right starting point. And then she came home and she had her, told her how she boiled them first and took the skin off. And every single step, she not only told her the ingredients, but why she was doing it that way and how to do it. And so while they were doing that, I was writing. That was the first time I'd ever thought to write that recipe down. And I thought, all these years, I never wrote that recipe down. So thanks to my daughter, we have that recipe written because, you know, Alzheimer's, and everybody who cooks a lot, they just put in a little smidgen of that and a little dash of that and a little. And if you've never made it, you need to know how much that is, because dash doesn't mean anything to somebody who's not a good cook. So
yes, man, that is true.
Down. And now, because of that, my mother has passed now many years ago. We can make her potato pie recipe whenever we want. And I even submitted it to a recipe book. My school, when I was still teaching at the college, they put together a recipe book of teachers or, you know, it could be a family recipe or whatever. So her recipe is in that book. And but you get the point. You need to know that there are steps to everything. And somebody who's been through it before you can help you. And happiness is the same way. You look at how other people are living their life. And if you want to live your life that way, you've got. Now, sometimes people are living their lives in ways you don't want to. And then you got to be wise enough to decide, do you want to do all those steps that they did? So they may have chosen a life of crime, and now they are wealthy and da-da-da. So you've got to decide, which route do you want to take? And that's what
that's definitely true.
Which route do you want to take? And you also have to choose people in your life who will celebrate you, who not just tolerate you. You've got to surround yourself with people that are going to uplift you. My oldest granddaughter asked me one day, she said, Grandma, this friend of mine did this and that, and she didn't pay me back. I think she borrowed money. She didn't pay it back. What should I do? And I said, well, you should just write that down in your book as a lesson of life. And she goes, no, I want to get my money back. I said, didn't you just tell me you asked for the money back and she didn't keep her word? Yeah. I said, okay. Then that's, she goes, how many times are you going to ask her? Well, she should do that. I said, that was not her
in her nature. So now is your job to decide, are you going to have friends like that in your life or not? And she said, well, what would you do? I said, I don't have friends like that, so I don't have that problem. I don't have any friends in my life, not one do I have in my life anymore, who is not an honorable, trustworthy, caring person that I want to spend time with. I mean, I've had them come through my life, but they're not anymore because I'm not going to, you know, how are you going to have a good life if you're surrounded by people who pull you down, put you down? It's a lot, and all of that contributes to your happiness. So that's why I wrote the book.
So thank you very much, Ms. Brown. We definitely enjoyed this interview. We've been very informative. I learned a lot. And real quick, just mention to everyone, you can find her books on Amazon. You can find her on Facebook. She does have a group. If you're interested in writing that story, whether it's for your family or for yourself, she does have a group. But you can find out everything that you're needing from her website, www.florabrown.com. I've been scrolling through it off and on, and I'm going to tell you, ladies and gents, please go check out the site. You're going to full of information right there for you at your fingertips. Again, this is
Thank
your
you.
Girl, Charlotte. You're welcome, ma'am. It's been my pleasure here on Cornbread Fed with us. We are going to end the show with the song. And this right here, I'm playing this because I forgot what I clipped. I clipped onto something, and I got your download of the 7 reasons you have trouble writing your story. And in it, you had your greeting, and you mentioned, and this really stuck out because this is who I am also, that you are a confirmed coffee snob. And you love British murder mysteries. With that said, in the honor of Coffee Queens, I'm going to close out the show with a song titled Coffee Wren, and this is by an independent artist named Taylor Music. Again, thank you very much, Ms. Flora. We look forward to having you back with us in the future.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Thank you.